Good evening. Welcome to the Force to Freedom podcast, brought to you by the Seeds of Liberty Network. Tonight we have Aaron and Dave. I'm Donnie. If you are looking for the Seeds of Liberty, you can find us at theseedsofliberty.com on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, and there's an RSS feed that's changing here soon, but it will be available shortly. So this evening we are discussing the topic of authority and the legitimacy of the idea. This revolves around a post I got on my Facebook feed, and it was essentially a question slash complaint. It's like, you know, why are you guys always pointing out the problems as opposed to offering up solutions? And the fundamental idea is, well, where do we start? You know, just offering a random solution is kind of, it's kind of half the story. It doesn't really make sense. Some things may not make sense without the proper context. So the topic this evening is just, what is authority? How does it manifest? What are the, you know, potential positives? What are the negatives? How does this whole idea of authority function? And essentially, how does it lead to horrible things? How does it lead to inefficient things? How does it lead to logical indiscrepancies between people? Some people can do X, some people can't do X. And how authority is the fundamental basis of moral hazard, and that is, you know, corruption. In essence, that's corruption. You know, how do people, you know, where do lobbyists come from, kind of thing? It's not from the stork. So just that fundamental concept of authority, why are we doing it? What is it all about? That's the topic for today. There's my opener. Go ahead, guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, authority, obviously we have it under government, where they're going to force, but I think authority starts at home. I think we're kind of indoctrinated with it at a young age. I mean, you're told to go to school. You know, you go to school, you have to listen to your teacher, you have to ask to use the bathroom. Even all the way up to high school, where you're almost an adult. And in fact, when you're 18 and in high school, you still have to ask permission to use the bathroom. I mean, I think that we kind of take authority way too far. I know I have a four-year-old. I've never had to spank my kid or ever thought about spanking my kid. Usually when I tell him not to do something, I don't say because I said so. I try not to say that. You know, I try to explain to him, like, why I don't want you to do this, because you're going to run and get hurt, you know. So I think that authority manifests itself from our society at a young age, because we're so used to having a ruler above us. I mean, since the dawn of men, we've had kings and queens and earls and jarls and whatever you want to say. I mean, and if you don't listen to them, you're put to death. Or in the case of modern civilization, you're still put to death, but you're thrown into a cage, you're penalized, you're fined, just for not agreeing with someone.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the whole point of the person saying, why aren't you offering solutions instead of just always pointing out the problem, is what we in the liberty movement like to go to is a who will pick the cotton thing. It's you know, I know if you've never heard this analogy before, this one, when I first heard it, really blew my mind, because I never really thought of it. But, you know, when I first started reading about this stuff, you know, I had these questions. Who's going to build the roads? Who's going to police? Who's going to do this? Who's going to do that? And it all boils down to who will pick the cotton. That's what you're asking. And that comes from in the 1800s, when the abolitionists would talk to the slave owners and say, you need to let your slaves go, you need to free them or pay them, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They would say, who is going to pick the cotton? Well, if I would have sat down and told them, or if an abolitionist would have sat down and said, oh, these giant machines that are robots that one person can run and do the job of 1,000 slaves, and it runs off of juice created by dinosaur remains, they would have looked at you and probably put you in a mental institution.
Yep. They would have used the southern phrase, oh, bless your heart. That's exactly what they would have used.
They would have, well, and a lot, you know, a big misconception here is the North owned slaves just as much as the South did.
Yeah, yep. And it was actually a very small percentage that the South owned slaves. I mean, I forget the exact number, and I mean, we can get in the Civil War argument all day long. It wasn't fought just over slavery. The main part of it was tariffs imposed by the North, which I guess would have been another revolution. I think the only reason they call it a Civil War is because they don't want it to sound like a revolution, I guess.
It's the war of federal aggression.
Northern aggression, but we'll go with federal aggression. I mean, from being from the South, we're all from the South, I believe, so...
yeah.
Hey, Virginia is still the
War South. Of Northern Aggression, War of the Union's Aggression, War of Federal right, Aggression.
Right. But back to the whole government, and people tend to forget that government, it's not a tangible asset. I mean, they're like, well, who's going to build the roads? Well, the same, the government doesn't build. I mean, the people build the roads. People do this. People do that. It's not government. I mean, government doesn't exist without the people. And it's an evil thing. That's like me going to my neighbor and saying, hey, man, your grass is getting really tall. I'd appreciate you cutting. I'm having a party next week. If you don't cut it, I'm going to shoot you. Or, oh, if you don't cut your grass. And it's sad. I mean, the county I live in now, if your grass is too high, you get a notice and they'll fine you. I'm like, first off, I'm growing hay. That's what I tell them. Yeah. My grass is, so I'm saying I'm growing hay. Prove that I'm not. Then I have to have an agricultural license. But then they won't even let me cut the grass in front of my yard. Because it's on a pretty busy road and it's too dangerous for me, if you can see my quotations. So I've got, you know, they're like, you can't cut this. When I first moved in, I tried to cut it there, and I had the county come by. You can't cut that. You're going to cause an accident. And I've cut my grass for the first time this year, and my yard is still yet to been cut by the government, and I'm not allowed to do it, or I'm fined. I don't
Can
get
you put
it.
A can you cage a goat in that area?
Well, actually, did you there's a YouTube video of a guy that had to cut around his pond. So he had an excavator with the lawnmower in it and it just went back and
forth. Yeah, I saw that.
That's what I want to do, is just go over my fence and just do that. But I mean, there's so many things that, yeah, you know, there's ways to do that without force.
You can't get one of those push silent ones and then go out in the middle of the night and do it.
Oh, somebody, they trust me, they're watching the black helicopters, man. They'll come in.
Can't let Aaron cut his grass.
But we let our government get away with way too much stuff, and people are afraid. And then when you disagree with it, you can leave. You know, that's the answer you get. And like I've mentioned before, that's going to be my new thing. If someone says, oh, it's really hot out today, well, you can leave. Because that's what the argument is, you know. Oh, man, I wish that milk wasn't blah, blah, blah. Well, if you don't like it, you can leave. Or go get a cow and milk your own. You know, it's ridiculous.
I think the shortcut is to take the ideas, because everybody's got an idea. Everybody's got an idea. Nobody's, you know, how do we all have to agree? And we really don't. And it's really not the idea that is the source of the problem. It's the method. How are we going to do X? When you start taking lunatic ideas like, oh, yeah, well, we're going to jail everybody who doesn't agree with us, that sounds ridiculous when you say it out loud. But when you sell the idea behind, oh, well, we're not going to cut the grass in this area because somebody might get hit by a car, oh, it sounds nice. Oh, okay, that's fine. But people keep the methodology out of the discussion because it's so fucked up that when you put it that way, nobody takes you seriously. And there's this weird cognitive dissonance that people have that, oh, it's government, and we all understand that the methodology used there is just absolutely ridiculous. And now it's still a bad method, but now it's just filtering into this micromanagerial lunacy where you can't cut the grass in front of your house. So,
right.
To examine that method is really the heart of the problem, and so many people find it convenient. Like, oh, well, I don't like this, so go ahead and smash his door in for it. Just don't smash my door in. So you get the people on both sides of liberty. Don't touch my guns, but go ahead and throw the Muslims out on their ass because I think they're bad people.
And it's the quote I coined. It's people only want liberty unless they don't agree with it. American flag's a prime example. People want to outlaw that. I don't like it, but I don't like a lot of stuff. I don't like people walking around with purple hair, but but I'm not trying to jail them because I don't agree with something. The moment that we start legislating symbols, or anything in that matter, is the moment that we've totally gone down the rabbit hole. I mean, there's no coming back. And
it's limiting free speech.
Right. It's limiting. I mean, as long as I'm not affecting you, then I don't see why anybody would be against what I'm doing. If I want to go smoke a plant, I'm not shoving it down your throat. You know, if I want to go make, I mean, I brew my own beer. By my state law, I live in the state of Virginia, they say I can only brew a certain amount and I can only give a certain amount away. I can't even give, like, say I want to go up to Dave and be like, hey, Dave, you know, I brewed this beer. I'm not even trying to make any money off of it, but give me a buck, I'll give you a bottle to help cover the cost. I'm not even allowed to do that because we have an alcohol beverage, you know, control. We are so micromanaged. I'll
buy it with Bitcoin.
Well, hey,
only me and you would know about it.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. But I'm gonna start brewing a Seeds of Liberty beer, and it's gonna be the beer of freedom. You know, because you have like America's choice beer, blah blah blah.
Can it have the beer of freedom? Can it have a? So, what is the one I had the other day? Sungrass, I think, or something.
I was gonna do Mount Rushmore with you, me, and Donnie's face in them. or something like that.
You've got to put Jeremy in Danilo. Oh,
well, there's four of one. You know, dude, if we can get it, I'll start brewing it now, and I'll send it to you guys. And anybody that's listening to this podcast, if they want to buy it, we'll circumvent the thing. I mean, the only problem is I don't think I can mail it through the USPS, but they don't have to know. well, now I'm on a terrorist watch list. Good job, Aaron. But
side note here. Jimmy Carter was talking to some dictator for like 20 years, had a working, you know, I'll send him a message, he sends me a message for 20 years and they can never figure out how. He was just putting it through the mail. like that's what a lot of people don't know is like, If you have an electronic device, they can look through anything you ever. They can, at this point, if you type something and delete it, they still receive what you typed.
And I know we're getting off the topic of authority right now, but did you see how much debt the U.S. Postal Service is already this year? It was it was like $100 and some billion. Like, why are we still funding this debt when FedEx and UPS could easily?
Because you're not looking at the real issue. Mm-hmm. It's not. Why should we fund this? It's how can government sustain a boondoggle that they can keep votes with, because the post office union is one of the largest political unions.
Yep.
So you have this huge union that gives all these Democratic senators, and probably Republican in some areas, gives them money for campaigns so they keep funding the USPS. And you have pensions tied into that. You have insurance tied into that. You have a socialist boondoggle that, if it ends, that's government saying that socialism doesn't work, that communism doesn't work, that we need to pull back.
Like Amtrak. Amtrak's another one.
Well, yeah, Amtrak. Pretty much anything that's not 100% government-owned, like the United States military is fascist. They're given a monopoly by the government, and that monopoly is protected. And if they start to fail, the government will prop them up.
Like
that's,
I said,
that's if
I
fascism.
Could, if I could profits, choose where my tax dollars go, NASA. That is where all my tax dollars go.
Profits get privatized and losses get socialized. That's pretty much economic fascism. And that's a real, I mean.
That's America in a nutshell, literally.
When you are being extorted for the funds to keep all these things propped up, they don't have to turn a profit. They don't have to be efficient. They are used as political tools. They are used as campaign finance tools. They used to call John Boehner toll booth Boehner, because he wouldn't do any legislation until he got his campaign funding first. So first you got to kick back to him, and then he pushes the bill that matters to you.
Well, and it was funny. People were like, the economy is getting better. The economy is getting better. And I said, yeah, well, look at Congress right now. They're in a deadlock. They're not passing anything. Like, we could, they're,
they also have the a 9% approval rating.
Right, right.
If a company had a 9% approval rating, they would go bankrupt.
Exactly. Right. Government says that we can't, you know, I think they said monopolies are illegal, but they have monopolies. Like, the U.S. Postal Service is a monopoly. Nobody else can mail pieces of paper. You know, not even FedEx or UPS. You can't send a letter through them.
Well, you can. You know, you just have to put it in
a package. Yeah. But they can't just mail envelopes with, you know, a stamp on it.
I tell everyone, and not to sidetrack again, and I'll wrap up with a point about authority, but I tell everyone, brick and mortar stores are dying to start buying UPS and FedEx and DHL and Amazon stocks, because when Amazon gets that drone delivery going on, it's...
Oh, man. Well, and the FAA, or the FFA, Federal Flight, yeah, FFA, yep. said they couldn't do it.
No. Because Amazon hasn't paid the FAA.
That's right.
Off
they
yet.
Haven't paid the toll yet. As soon as they go, they are going to go pay the people in Congress to change that law. And guess what? Now they could do it because those people are magic.
But imagine if we didn't have all these freaking organizations. We'd be in flying cars by now.
Oh, there was a guy in Los Angeles delivering burritos with a drone.
That's awesome.
And
Taco Bell needs that.
And he was I think he made $500,000 in like 6 months. I could be wrong on this. And the Los Angeles County came in there and shut his ass down. So that's just and there had not been one accident yet from his services.
Right, but it's not about the accident. It's really not about safety. If anybody wanted to understand safety, you can look right at the drug war. It's far safer to let people grow their own weed in their backyard like people do tomatoes. Nobody's killing anybody over tomatoes. If you could grow this shit in your backyard like you could with tomatoes, there's no cartels being funded. Now, yeah, cartels run some other stuff, but if you take that weed money out of the way and people just do it by themselves, but there's no money in that for government. And on conversely, there's a ton of money in it when they're the ones making, you know, tons of campaign contributions come from the private prisons.
Pharmaceuticals, private prisons, police unions. Like, when you look at, like, in some counties, there's 80% people in prisons for the drug war. Yep. If the drug war ends, those prisons go tits up. The people, the private prisons, they go bankrupt.
Right.
So when you look at how fascism is set up, corporations using the state to enforce stuff to make them profits. Right. It's a very scary thing, and that's all from people believing that the state has the right to do these things.
Right. The state has an inherent right that you don't, and that doesn't make any logical sense. If it's okay for me to punch you in the face, it's okay for you to punch me in the face. If at any point there's a positive barrier where I hit you and you can't hit me back, we've created a problem where I can abuse you now. And that's exactly what happens. It might start off small, okay, but it's that small little moral hazard that's the current phrase that's used in public is moral hazard. I have a quote from Bastiat and it's really pertinent. When plunder has become a way of life for a group of men living together in society, they create for themselves in the course of time a legal system that authorized it and a moral code that glorifies it. And where we live now, people are just trying to do what we can get away with. I don't like all the religious people screaming, hey, you know, we have a moral decay in our society. To a certain extent, they're correct. And usually they're pointing at two men kissing in public to display, oh my God, this is the moral decay of society. No, it's not. It's the cop who's pulling people over on the side of the road and saying, I don't like your rate of speed. You didn't hurt anybody. You didn't cause an accident. But I got this radar gun here that says 7 digits higher than what I said you could go. You now owe me $300.
And didn't they make a movie about that with Tom Cruise? I think it was called Minority Report or something like that.
Oh, and by the way, I think I smell weed in your car.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, exactly. And then it just becomes this, we're a gang. We do what we want to do. And the guys who get involved in it, they don't see anything wrong with it anymore. And these people, I don't think they necessarily started off. I don't think they rolled out of bed and like, you know what, I'm going to go shoot a black guy and extort an old lady today. I don't think that was the plan when they got into this line of work. But they're going to get up and I'm going to go enforce law. And there's no human on earth who needs law enforcement. There are people who need security. There are people who need protection services. Nobody needs law enforced upon them. If you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with me stopping a murder, or Aaron stopping a murder, or Dave stopping a murder. There's nothing inherently wrong when a cop stops a murder. However, there is something inherently wrong with me going out and writing tickets and saying that people owe me money. People look at me like I'm fucking crazy because I'm doing it in a t-shirt and jeans and some other guy's doing it in a costume. And I just think it's asinine.
I do want to pull over a cop one day that's speeding. Pull him over, and when they try to get out of the car,
you'll get shot.
Dude,
no, I've seen it.
When I was a cop, man, New York City was going back from Hurricane Katrina, and they were flying balls to the wall, and our cops pulled them over. It was the funniest thing ever. Of course, they didn't get a ticket. But back to what you were saying, Donnie, about people not rolling out of bed and wanting to do that. I mean, I'll admit, when I was a cop, man, I got this large head upon me that I had all this authority that I just started becoming a general asshole. And you can ask my girlfriend now, I'm an asshole. I mean, I don't have any compassion towards people. But, I mean, I would literally, like, start yelling at people that and I would take things personal. And it wasn't actually until I went to Iraq and came back that I kind of mellowed out, man. I mean, if I was on a domestic violence call or something like that, I treated the guy that just beat his wife. I didn't yell at him or throw him down or beat the crap out of him. And people just can't separate that. People take things so personal. Like, somebody runs from the police and they chase him and then they just start tackling him. They take it personal. I was like, dude, it's not like they freaking, you know, beat the crap out of you or anything. They literally just ran from you. It's cool, man. Calm down. Or people want to talk over everybody, and you just see police officers go off on them. And it was sad. And it took Iraq. It took something like Iraq to realize there's more to the world.
Yep.
For me, at least.
I mean, what I said in episode one of the podcast is policing in any way or whatever, being a law enforcement officer. I don't believe police and law enforcement is the same thing, because police used to be peace officers. Now they just enforce the laws. But what I said is it's a job for a robot. It's a job for someone who can't, for something that won't interject emotion into the situation. Because I don't care who you are, how emotionless you are, if someone's in your face telling you fuck you pig, screaming at you, calling you a welfare whore, I pay your, you're gonna take all that personally. A robot, you could yell into your blue in the face and it doesn't care. It has parameters it must follow,
which can also be a bad thing. I mean, watch RoboCop. I mean,
oh, yeah, but then you change the laws,
right?
Instead of changing the police.
Well, I mean,
I understand that. I'm against all laws, but I'm saying if you had to have it one way, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here. If you had a robot force that had no emotion, hey, look, I'm just, this robot's following the law. If you don't like the law, change it.
Well, I mean, and when I was a cop, if I pulled you over and you were nice to me, chances were you weren't getting a ticket. But if you were a bitch or a dick to me, you were getting a fucking ticket. I had that power. I mean, I had that. Yeah. The state gave me that power. They gave me the – and you know what? If you were a big dick to me, then I'd find something else to give you a ticket for. I'd write you 3 or 4 tickets.
And someone shouldn't have that power over another human.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. Well, just because you're having a bad day doesn't mean that I should be able to make your day worse.
Well, just recognizing that there's a fundamental difference between power and authority. Authority is this a belief system. It's not any real different than a religion. I actually had a friend point out to me today – you'll like this, Dave – that there is a difference between religion and government, and that is, a religion is an assumed infallibility, whereas government comes with the ability to amend.
We messed up. We'll change that next week, and it'll be okay.
Yeah, exactly. But I just thought it was interesting. Like, he's not really one of us yet. He's asking, he's talking, but at the same time, he's a real good thinker, and he was just like, man, that there's one thing different there, and he told me about it. I was like, I figure Dave will enjoy that.
Yeah, I've been more structured now when I try to start talking to someone about this thing, about getting them into the question phase, and I do that with questions, but it's all taxes. Taxes is the main crux of the argument, and a lot of people don't realize that, but taxes are the main crux. And you know what? I've never met anyone that truly, unless they're lying to themselves, likes paying taxes and knows that their tax money is going to what they think it's going to. No one knows that.
Well, they can't even tell me where their taxes money goes.
Exactly.
I mean, you have the income tax. Well, go ahead with your
point,
Dave.
So what I asked them is, you know, would you feel morally justified going to your neighbor who you, like, literally walked over the next day and said, I'm not paying my taxes this year, and, you know, and I don't give a fuck. Would you feel morally justified grabbing your handgun or a gun, walking over there, knocking on the door and saying, if you don't pay these taxes, I'm going to kill you? Because we can go through the steps of aggression that happens after you don't pay taxes. They send you a few letters, Then a tax collector comes out. If you deny him on your property, the sheriffs come out. If you deny the sheriffs to come out on the property, there's a problem. If you resist your arrest, they'll kill you. So every law, every command, every obedient decree that government issues is a death threat. Because if you do not comply, you will die. So a lot of people, you have to get, because you'll say, oh, taxation is theft. They'll go, no, it's not. You can voluntarily pay that. What are you talking about? They don't send people to jail. I pull up people, last night I was saying in chat, I pulled up someone, the tax code in the United States government law where they can put you in jail for 5 years, take all property equal to what they think you owe, and then you lose all your voting, gun, et cetera, rights just for not paying up. So you become a felon for not paying up. And if you resist that arrest from a sheriff's deputy, because those are the people who enforce tax laws, the sheriffs come to your house, not your local police department, your sheriffs and the IRS. They come to your fucking house and they say, pay up, come with us or die.
Oh, and the IRS has SWAT teams. And they're enforcing these at gunpoint.
They ran a SWAT team on a lady who owed 5 cents. Think about how egregious amount of money, overtime for all those guys, SWAT training for all those guys, military equipment for all those guys, training for all those guys, someone to be their boss, the union, it just all that for 5 fucking cents. It's all it is just to show a power structure and that they're willing to do that even for 5 cents.
And that's the fun part, because that's where we go from, hey, okay, maybe these guys have something to say. Now we become heretics, because that's constitutional. It might only be for 5 cents, but according to the Constitution, this shit is all legitimate.
Well,
and that's where we become the full-blown heretics, because we dare take the name of the Constitution in vain, and all of a sudden it's, oh, well, wait a minute. If you're talking about it not following constitutional shit, maybe you're just the fucked up one. It's like, listen, it's right there, Article 1, Section 8. The only reason you make a government is to protect property and to protect people. When you get to Article 1, Section 8, you violate property. The government can take your property at any point because they made it up. They made that whole idea up.
Article 1, Section 8 turns any government into a mafia.
Well,
essentially, yeah.
I think in order to be a good voluntarianist or anarchist or anarcho-cat, you need to be well versed in the Constitution, because you need to know what you're doing. So under the Constitution, it also says that taxes are supposed to be apportioned, and they're supposed to be indirect, or they're supposed to be, I mean, basically you can, they're voluntary. Like, I don't have to buy gas,
except for interstate
Constitution.
Right.
That's
not, well, as far as
the Commerce Clause is where the government gets elbow deep in everybody.
Right, but the taxes are supposed to be apportioned, and they're not. They're unapportioned. Like, you're taking money from me, and you're giving them to, you're not equally distributed. Like, if I pay a dollar, I'm supposed to get a dollar back from the government and services, but I'm not. In fact, your income tax goes to pay the interest of the Federal Reserve. It doesn't even go – and the Grace Commission proved that under Reagan. Like, they have a document that a private corporation did with government funding that said the government is not doing its job, that it literally says that
– It doesn't matter how many times you prove government is not doing its job. If people believe that government is right, just, and moral, it's going to exist. Right.
And I can make an argument that not only are you getting an apportioned amount back, you're getting way more than that. Where do you think the debt came from? Okay, you're getting way more back in quote unquote services. Now you could chalk it up to cronyism, where it ends up in pork barrel projects and roads that go nowhere, and the F-35 fighter, which could have purchased Africa, every square inch of it by now, and it's still not done, and it's still, I mean, I love that word, Dave, boondoggle. It is the biggest boondoggle to date, where they put $1.5 trillion into this aircraft and it's still not ready to roll. There's still not a production model.
You want
to
see how big of a boondoggle? Like, a lot of people don't know what boondoggle means, but boondoggle is something that is meant to look to be productive but isn't. All right, like it's like you go into one side of the pool, getting a cup of water out of it, walking to the other side of the pool and pouring it out, and going, "Hey, look." Yep. I'm moving water.
I'm filling my pool.
I'm filling my pool. Exactly. So The war on drugs, the addiction rate in the United States in 1970, late 1970, when they first started the DEA, the war on drugs, was 1% nationwide. Do you know what the addiction rate is in 2015? $1.1 trillion later.
Probably either the same or less.
It's 1%. It hasn't changed. Yeah. It hasn't changed. So why the fuck are they still doing it? It's because you've created DEA jobs, DEA pensions. You've created a welfare class with the prisons, the people in the DEA, et cetera, et cetera. The police officers. Think about how many less police officers each city would have if they weren't fighting the drug war. You're creating welfare recipients. Well, and any police officer that doesn't believe that they're a welfare recipient, they are very confused about their job.
Yeah, one of the things people really misunderstand about crime rates is they're like, oh, well, the crime rate this year was terrible. We can't cut back police. You have to understand, once you start taking certain things that shouldn't be crime to begin with, like some dude smoking pot in his living room, your crime rate naturally goes down and nothing changes. You don't need all those extra cops. One of the most egregious things that the public sector does that the private sector can't mathematically get away with is pensions. People who work public sector jobs, they don't make a whole hell of a lot of money. And if you were to look at it in a private sector job, they're probably making 15, 20% more. But those people, after they leave that public sector job, they have the sweetest pension deals. They don't work that 20. They're not public servants. They know exactly what they're doing. It's the long-term bribe. That's all it really is.
Let me ask you guys two questions, all right? And then I want to hear you guys talk about this. What city in the United States, has the highest crime rate?
Chicago.
No.
Detroit.
No. Camden, New Jersey.
Ooh. Okay, right? How about that?
What city has the largest police force in the country?
Camden, New Jersey.
New York City.
No. City per capita.
Camden, New Jersey.
Camden, New Jersey.
Oh, I got that one right. I get a cookie.
There's almost a cop on every corner. They have the highest per capita police to civilian ratio.
Okay.
In Camden. So how many more police officers are you going to need until the crime rate goes down?
One.
Yeah,
one,
yeah.
One cop for every person who's not a cop.
Everybody
gets their own.
Also, side note, I asked the other day on Twitter, if Barack Obama went out and deputized everybody in the entire country as a deputy sheriff, you were all now law enforcement officers of the United States of America, what would happen to the crime rate?
All of the current cops would become internal affairs. And nothing would change. At all.
No. You got the code. You got the blue silence code, man.
Yeah, you have the
No, man. You know what? Yeah, that's smart. That you are onto something there, Dave.
I thought about it.
My vote, sir.
How much crime would the crime go down? What would happen?
You wouldn't have any crime because everybody would be
exactly crime. It would be a crime-free paradise of the United States of America. No one.
You could investigate yourself and find that you've done nothing wrong.
But anyways, back to my first one. Camden has the largest police department per capita in the nation, and they have the highest crime rate. If that's not like the clearest picture of more cops equal more crime, thus justifying more cops, thus making more crime. Like it's at what point does it stop? Like they build on each other until infinity.
I would say more cops create more crime, but I would say that more cops does not make less crime.
More cops find more crime.
Right. That's the point.
Well, I don't do the correlation equals causation thing. However, when you flip that around and you start removing cops, crime does go down. Because the resources that you have there, like there was a city where their police force went on strike. And they're like, fuck it, you're gone. They fired them all, and they hired private security. And now crime is magically down like 70%. Well, of course, the private security people, they're not enforcing law. They are only protecting people and property. So all of a sudden, there's no more potheads getting busted. There's no more just magical, oh, this guy hasn't paid a parking ticket in 6 months. We're going to go bust his balls. So it's just that whole idea. when your fundamental basis is I could just run around and terrorize other people because, quote, it's my job, I'm just doing my job, well, then what's to stop it from becoming the atrocity that we're seeing it become now? And I really don't think it's changed a whole lot. I mean, I think there's been a fundamental shift in the last 30 years to where people are just trying to use the law to get away with whatever they can. But I think there was always this there, and now you're just seeing more of it because of cell phones.
Everyone's got a camera in their pocket.
Yes. Yeah. So I think there's a little upturn on the corruption, and that's kind of just what's been in the public eye. But now there's a lot more public eyes. So even though it's only gone up a little bit, the exposure it gets is a lot more.
Aaron, anything about what I said about Camden?
I mean, like I said, I agree with what Donnie said. I mean, the amount of victimless laws that we have right now is astronomical. I mean, I think we can all agree that rape's wrong, murder's wrong, robbing someone's wrong, breaking into someone's house is wrong, vandalizing is wrong. But when you make stuff illegal like prostitution, any of your vice crimes, the biggest argument I get when you say, well, prostitution, well, what about human trafficking? Well, that's totally different. I mean, you have prostitution right here, and you have human trafficking right here. There's two different things. That's like saying, well, murder's okay because I can go out and shoot someone that's about to shoot me. No, that's called self-defense. And that's another argument that I get a lot, is they'll go on and they'll say, the non-aggression principle doesn't work because you have to force someone's view of non-aggression. I was like, well, no, you don't, because self-defense isn't aggression. Self-defense is not violence. It is the counter-argument. It's the counter-action to violence. Violence may need to be done in order to achieve that self-defense, but I think we can all agree that you have the right to defend yourself or another.
For you logic nerds out there, if you don't understand basic logic, it's the the person making the active claim has the burden of proof. So when someone is committing a violent act against you, they're the ones who have to justify, why am I committing violence upon you? A passive claim is, I get to protect myself, I'm not doing anything to anyone else. So that's a passive claim. So that's that kind of logical the burden of proof logical fallacy is, oh, well, if you're not aggressing on someone, you have to justify your actions. There's a billion actions I'm not doing right now. I'm not exploring Mars. I'm not having French toast during the Renaissance. I'm not raping anyone right now. I don't have to explain why I am not doing something. I only have to explain why I am doing something. So just the fundamental logic that people need to start thinking and understanding, and not getting caught up in a logical fallacy of, well, that sounds like a good argument, but it's bullshit. I mean, that's lawyering 101. That's not logic 101.
That's sophistry.
Sophistry. I love it.
I want to say something to anybody that hears this. Killing a cop, these people that are running out killing cops, the guy that killed two in New York, the other New York cop that got killed the other day, the two in Mississippi that just got killed. Killing a cop doesn't make you a hero. It might make you a hero to some gangbanger, drug dealer, etc., but doesn't make you a hero. Talking a cop into quitting his job, his fascist job, and getting into the private sector, getting a private security job, or hell, starting a garden, doesn't matter, as long as they're not collecting a welfare check or a state check, whatever you want to call it. That makes you a hero.
Yeah, the fact that people are going out, and it's sad that people will justify that. I mean, you can't justify violence with violence,
Right.
I've had friends on Facebook that when a police officer gets shot, they're like, well, they shouldn't have been. You know what? That officer has a family. I mean, they're at the end of the day, they are still a person, and then they don't realize what they're doing is wrong half the time. I mean, it took me a long time to, even after I stopped being a police officer, to admit that a lot of the things that I did was immoral. Did I save people's lives? Yeah, I did. I saved a lot. I remember one lady I saved because her husband knocked her teeth out, and legitimately, I think she would have been dead if I wasn't there. But I mean, I don't think I did anything else that I couldn't have done if I was a private police officer.
Yeah, people get way too caught up in that. And it's, you know, if you are defending yourself, you know, that's just an ugly situation. And I don't think it's any, I don't think it's a grandiose thing that you kill a cop as opposed to you kill any other violent aggressor. And you definitely shouldn't be out hunting people. Like, if you're out hunting people, you are exercising what the United States government likes to call foreign policy. Okay? No, that's not a bueno thing. You cannot hunt other people for sport. That's bad. And the fact that somebody has to be even reminded of that's kind of lunacy. But I think the police do put themselves in a bad position. And sometimes, and it's going to get them, I mean, on a long enough timeline, just about every cop is looking at getting killed on a long enough timeline. And that's a bad thing.
It's getting worse and worse. But I will say, I am kind of sick of hearing the whole, not what you just said, Donnie, but people are like, well, they put themselves in that situation. They, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's like saying a woman put herself in a rape situation because she was wearing a short skirt. I mean, it gets, just because a police officer is there investigating something.
I agree with you to some extent, but I am almost at a level where I'm sick of the deification of police officers in this country by the right. They're all heroes. They're not.
Right.
Do some heroic things, but they're just but there's a lot of bad things.
I mean, shit. More, you know, when the Chicago police chief says that more crimes are prevented due to private ownership of weapons than any police officer could ever stop, he basically just says my job's bullshit. Immediately he said that. We don't do anything. Private citizens. We should be training private citizens how to react to certain scenarios.
And I believe the statistic, and of course 33.95% of statistics are made up. I'm going to throw that random number out there. But I think that on average they say 2.5 million cases a year of a private citizen defending themselves with a firearm.
And that's just what they know. That's just
what's on a police report. 2.5 million. And that doesn't sound like a lot in the grand scheme of things when you have 300 million citizens, not counting the people that aren't citizens living in America. And our homicide rate's, 8,000? Maybe. Oh, I'm sorry, 12,000, 8,000 of which are firearms. That is such a small number.
Yeah, if you look at things. If you take the five major cities, Chicago,
Chicago's a majority of them.
Chicago, New York, Pittsburgh, Los Angeles, and New Orleans. If you take those out of the scenario, America has one of the smallest homicides involving a firearm of any kind in the entire world. They're in the bottom half. Yeah.
And except for maybe New Orleans, I mean, you have some of the strictest gun laws in New York. You have some of the strictest gun laws in Chicago and California. I mean, California is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all because government wants to be the protector.
They want a monopoly on security. And if they realize that, and people are worried about people being John Wayne going out there. I don't see what's the problem. If I want to patrol my neighborhood, I should be able to patrol my neighborhood. If I see someone breaking into someone's house, I should be able to stop that. I mean, I would expect if someone's breaking into my house that my neighbor stopped them. I would expect that because I would do the same thing for them.
But no, what I was saying earlier about killing a cop, 99% of cops are just as indoctrinated as any other statist. They believe that their job, what they're doing, when they go home at night and they take their uniform off, they think that they did a good job and they were a positive force for the day.
Yep.
They don't realize what they're actually doing. And now I'm not saying that doesn't excuse their actions by any means. What I'm saying is you got to look at everything subjectively. You have to. Not everything's cut and dry butter on bread. You have to look at things through the eyes of your oppressor as well. That's how you beat an idea. You figure out why they're doing it. So when we have cops out here who think they're doing a good job, you know, and I just read the other day, military people as well. I mean, I feel like we've left military out a lot this episode, but cops, military, people that are going overseas and killing people, your drone pilots that are blowing people up, these guys think that they're doing the right thing. They think they're doing a good job, and they're not. You know, I read an article yesterday, cop morale across the nation is at an all-time low, they said. I don't know if that's because there's more hate on cops right now or more cops are waking up to realize this isn't really what I signed up to do. And now I'm caught in it because I'm not going to turn down my pension, my great health care for my whole family and this cushy job. You know? Yeah.
I didn't really start questioning until I got to Iraq and I met Iraqis, and they're and assholes. They're
That's
just
the same
like
thing for
us.
Me, yeah.
They're assholes just like us. They don't care. They don't care what we do. They're not all the shit that the media will tell you. It's nonsense. They're just normal people trying to get by. They have a lower quality of living. Guess what they want? A higher quality of living. That's it. That's it. Every person on earth is just walking around trying to do right by themselves, and the vast majority of them are not willing to do somebody else dirty to get that way. They're not willing to steal and murder to get a better quality of life. And we've kind of got this place where we think, as long as it's the government, it's this authority, that okay, then it's okay now, and it's not. Like,
and
that's.
And I'm gonna read a quote by Robert Hicks. I don't know if you've heard this quote about good cop, bad cop, and I think it sums up a lot, because people are like, well, not all cops are bad or not all cops are good. So I'm gonna read this quote. It's a short quote. The whole good cop, bad cop question can be disposed of much more decisively. We need not enumerate what proportion of cops appears to be good, or listen to someone's anecdote about his Uncle Charlie, an allegedly good cop. We need only consider the following. 1. A cop's job is to enforce the laws, all of them. 2. Many of the laws are manifestly unjust, and some are even cruel and wicked. 3. Therefore, every cop has agreed to act as an enforcer for laws that are manifestly unjust or even cruel and wicked. There are no good cops. And I think what Mr. Robert Hicks is saying is spot on, because as a police officer, they are given a lot of discretion. I mean, one of the things I wanted, if someone, when I was a police officer, if I saw someone with a little weed, dude, I'd just be like, I had to dump it out, because I would lose my job or I'd get arrested. But I wouldn't ruin someone's life over a plant. I mean, I just morally thought that was wrong. But there's also, and I'm not saying what I did was moral at all or I was a good cop at all, but I think what needs to happen is police officers need to take a look at some of these laws and be like, well, and I think it's a start. I don't want to enforce that law. I don't agree with that law. I'm not going to enforce that law. There's no victim, you know, but they can't do that because they have this thing called a paycheck and a pension on the line, and they're so worried about losing that.
I think you bring up it's not what you said, it's what you didn't say. And that is when these people have this ability to choose, like, okay, say the cops are just going to go out and like Dave said before, just be robots and enforce them all. There, people would be in an outrage. People, like I'm in Texas right now, people would burn down Austin 10 minutes. Cops on enforcing every single law, 10 minutes, and people would be lighting the Capitol building on fire, and they'd be ready to kill every politician for all of these laws. But because of this broad base of discretion, okay, so the cop looks at it and goes, Jesus, that's bullshit, I'm not gonna do it. But he gets very comfortable with asserting his own moral code over other people. Well, so now, instead of having necessarily the law to guide him, now it's his discretion guiding him. And you've created a whole bunch of subjective rule sets running around with guns, poking people in the ass. And that, I don't think it's in specifically a problem, but you know that especially the quote, the bad ones, the real lunatics, the real sociopaths, they go around and they use the law to justify whatever the fuck they want to do, and that becomes a super bad problem.
Well, and it comes back to the point of people saying, oh, well, you know, the troops will never do this, or the police officers will never do that, and it brings it back to New Orleans. They went door to door and confiscating people's firearms.
Kent State, New Orleans.
Kent State. Who would have thought that in this day and age that police officers would go door to door confiscating guns, especially because a majority of the, and I can safely say this, a majority of the people that are in the police forces and a majority of the people that are in the military are right wing. They just are. They're conservative. They're very pro-gun. And the fact that they would go against their own morals to do this because they're being told to do it speaks volumes.
I mean, one of my best friends is a police officer, and me and him go shooting all the time. So I'm not going to sit here and believe that he would feel comfortable confiscating guns. Like, at some point, that cop's got to realize, why is it okay for me to own a gun and not them?
Right.
Where did I get this special right?
Okay, so we're going to wrap it up here. I'm pretty sure we batted it around enough. If If you guys have any questions, post them on the Seeds of Liberty Facebook page. We will get at them one at a time. It's not like we're smarter than you. It's just that we kind of took some time and thought about it. Like
we to add to what you're saying, if you have a question and you don't feel like putting your name beside it or your Facebook profile for anybody, if you want to send us an email at questions.seedsofliberty@gmail.com, we will answer any email we get.
And also add us on Twitter. We each have individual Twitter accounts. So thanks for joining us.
Yep. Have a good night.